Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
So what are the odds, ladies and gentlemen? The United Nations releases a much ballyhooed report that says the chances are now, the level of certainty is 90% that man has created the amount of climate change that has occurred over the last 50 years. And it gets released the same day that tornadoes hit Florida. And forget about having the United Nations report get any coverage at all. Because, and also, it's the same day that the NIE, the National Intelligence Estimate, there's a head-scratcher. Remember the one in 2002? That was good. This one comes out and says, well, yeah, you can call it a civil war in Iraq. Except that doesn't completely describe the complexity of what's going on there. So when the administration was spending all these months denouncing people who are calling it a civil war, I didn't understand. They were doing that because NBC and all those other media weren't accounting for all the complexity. They were angry at the media for making Iraq look too good. Because it's worse than a civil war. But, you know, so anyway, those two things sort of buried the UN climate change report, which said, you know, better hurry. So we'll just relax. But on the subject of Iraq, ladies and gentlemen, Dateline Washington and those troops we're sending, we're surging. A lack of armored vehicles, weapons, and other equipment is hampering missions of U.S. troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. Who says? That damn Inspector General at the Pentagon. Can we get rid of him? Because he is making this thing look bad. Equipment shortages have been a near constant issue since the U.S.-led invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq. I guess because the grown-ups are in charge. Some soldiers have used improvised armor, as you know. Service members were not always equipped to effectively complete their mission, said a summary of their survey. Beyond armored vehicles, soldiers ran short of weapons operated by teams of troops, electronic countermeasure devices, and communications gear. Well, you know, if we don't have it for our first responders here, why do they expect it over there? It's the information age, and you expect communications gear? The full report remains classified. Shh. The summary did not say how widespread the problem was, but described internal controls to ensure troops had the correct equipment as, quote, not adequate, unquote. Didn't say not adequate. Didn't say inadequate. Not adequate. Could be swell, you know? Could be better than adequate. It could be like the, not a civil war, worse. And on the same subject, the Inspector General for Iraqi reconstruction that we have, unless we get rid of his office, as the Bush administration wanted to, says that despite nearly $108 billion budgeted for the reconstruction of Iraq, the country's electrical output and oil production are still below pre-war levels. Stocks of gasoline and kerosene have plummeted to their lowest levels in at least 2 years. This is what Dick Cheney refers to as enormous progress. The United States has plunked in at least $38 billion of the rebuilding money, according to our Inspector General for Iraqi Reconstruction, an office the Bush administration wanted last year to abolish. The litany of major American contractors suspected of having wasted large amounts of the money has lengthened, according to new investigations by the IG. An American company, DynCorp, appeared to act almost independently of its contracting officers at the State Department at times, billing the United States for millions of dollars of work that was never authorized and starting other jobs before they were requested. Go DynCorp! It's called initiative, babe. The findings of misconduct by the company on a $188 million job to build living quarters and purchase weapons and equipment for the Iraqi police were serious enough that the Inspector General's office has begun a fraud probe. Yeah, that's what's standing between us and a fine Iraqi police force is some fraud by DynCorp. But every little bit hurts. Hello, welcome to the show. from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show, an edition that was recorded late Friday, just in case Florida had more tornadoes to eat up more news cycles. But an edition recorded just in time to let you know that you need to be really careful, really dot your I's, cross your I's, dot your T's when you invite Anderson Cooper to interview you.
I just got an email. I'm supposed to go to L.A. on Saturday to do a four-hour interview with Larry King for this Larry King special.
For his anniversary?
I couldn't believe it. Saturday? I know. I was like, what?
Who sent you the email?
You know, I think I didn't know. I think they sent me the email like 2 days ago, and I didn't even see it. And then I suddenly noticed this four-hour interview on my calendar. I was like, "Good Lord!" And I can't even remember if I agreed to it or not. Like, I think I might have agreed to this like a week ago, thinking, "Oh, like, yeah, that's for."
What's another week day in LA? Did you do that last Saturday?
Yeah.
I'll go. You want me to go to the interview?
Yes, please.
Yeah. All right, Anderson. Thanks anyway. Now, that's from the Found Object Department, from which there will be much more today. But in the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to read the trades for you. From Advertising Age, just the same week that a study came out that said that blamed the prevalence of erectile dysfunction in men on, among other things, watching TV, which is, of course, where they learn about all the cures for erectile dysfunction. That's a closed loop. Anyway, here's Advertising Age. New study lays into direct-to-consumer drug advertising. I'll read it for you. Dateline New York, a new study that blasts direct-to-consumer advertising and includes comments from former Food and Drug Administration Commissioner Dr. David Kessler, has proponents of direct drug ads fighting right back. The study, funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and published in the Annals of Family Medicine, claims the $4.5 billion direct-to-consumer category, DTC, produces ads that are more emotional than informational and may be convincing Americans they're sicker than they really are. Quote, we're seeing a dramatization of health problems that many people use to manage without prescription drugs, said the study's lead author, Dominic Frosch. That's a foreign-sounding name, isn't it? Assistant Professor of General Internal Medicine and Health Services at UCLA. The DTC ads send the message that you need drugs to manage these problems, and that without medication, your life will be less enjoyable, more painful, and maybe even out of control. Unquote. In a stunning commentary that accompanied the study, former Food and Drug Commissioner Kessler and University of California San Francisco legal professor Douglas Levy wrote that the ads do not, quote, effectively or consistently convey important information about product risks and benefits, unquote. Dr. Kessler was an opponent of DTC advertising during his tenure at the FDA, but regulations were relaxed and prescription drug advertising hit TV after he left his post. But replies an industry spokesperson, DTC ads are not intended to be an encyclopedia with all possible information about a product, says Dan Jaffe, executive VP of the Association of National Advertisers. Quote, the primary role of DTC advertising is to encourage consumers to discuss health issues with their doctor. There is substantial evidence that this goal is being achieved, unquote. Using statistical analysis, the study reports that 82% of the ads made factual claims, but far fewer provided further information about the illnesses such as causes, 26%, risk factors, 26%, or prevalence, 25%. 95% of the ads made emotional appeals, and 78% implied that use of the medication would result in social approval, the study found. Well, everybody likes a guy who can perform. And people who get a full night's sleep are just intrinsically more popular. John Camp, executive director of the Washington-based Coalition for Healthcare Communications, says, there's no such thing as a perfect or complete communications tool. and that includes direct-to-consumer drug marketing. Quote, although interesting, this study is far from a definitive work and certainly not a basis for more stringent regulation of direct-to-consumer advertising. Unquote. A powerful conclusion drawn by an interested party, ladies and gentlemen. Inevitable when I read the trades for you. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And ladies and gentlemen, from an interview he did with Juan Williams this week on part of his Please Still Look Up to Me tour, President Bush trying to explain why Dick Cheney sees enormous progress where his own CIA and national intelligence agencies across the board see a dire and discouraging situation in Iraq. Here's President. Is it Bush? Yes.
Well, I think the vice president is a person reflecting a half glass full mentality.
I think he's put his finger on the mentality right there. It's a half glass full, which when you stop to think about it, is so much better than a half glass empty. I mean, nothing makes me want to take a prescription medication more than just seeing all those empty half glasses sitting around. But now, ladies and gentlemen, on a happier note, the apologies of the week. So sorry. First, from the aforementioned NPR interview with President Bush, it ain't Juan Williams who's sorry.
There's distrust in Washington. I am surprised, frankly, at the amount of distrust that exists in this town. And I'm sorry it's the case, and I'll work hard to try to elevate it.
He's going to work hard to try to elevate the distrust. We'll keep an eye on it. We'll keep an eye on that. A Dateline New Zealand, a University of Canterbury student who accepted money to strip during a night of hijinks, has formally apologized to Antarctica New Zealand bosses for her antics. This was at the New Zealand base in Antarctica. Kiwi officials have been left red-faced by the impromptu strip show, which occurred just days before a host of dignitaries, including the Prime Minister Helen Clark and Sir Edmund Hillary, arrived at the base to celebrate 50 years on the ice. And she did not explain that she did her strip act because it was there. She didn't. I'm just telling you. But more apologies. Dateline Clemson, North Carolina. Tears, apologies, and applause punctuated a meeting of about 200 Clemson University students who discussed their feelings in the wake of a gangsta-themed party over the Martin Luther King Jr. weekend. The university brought together students on both sides of the emotionally charged issue that raised racial concerns on the campus. Wednesday night meeting was intense and emotional and ended with words of forgiveness and hugs. Shortly after the meeting started, 15 students involved in the party stood up one by one from different parts of the room and apologized. Scattered applause greeted the first one. Dateline Detroit, a 21-year-old man freed from custody for a murder he committed at age 11, has apologized to the family of his victim with help from talk show host Oprah Winfrey. Thanks, Oprah. Making the country safe for apologies. A week after using a racial slur during a Georgetown, Texas City Council meeting, Council Member Gabe Sansing said the remark arose from frustration during a discussion on tree trimming. In a heated debate last week about changes to an ordinance protecting older trees, Sansing raised questions about hiring tree specialists to prune such trees. Everybody says they're all certified arborists, he said during the meeting. There are a bunch of wetbacks out there with chainsaws who's doing the pruning of those big trees, and the arborist is sitting on his butt down in his office in Austin. During a break, Sansing asked Mayor Gary Nealon to allow him to apologize for his comment. In the heat of the battle on pruning, I used an inappropriate term for people who live here in Texas. He said after the break, I want to apologize for the use of the term arborist. Wetback. Dateline Winton, North Carolina. Hey, North Carolina is looking good in the apology department this week. An animal rights worker charged with animal cruelty for euthanizing animals in the back of a van and then dumping their bodies in a trash bin apologized Thursday on the witness stand. Adria Hinkle testified she was supposed to bring the animals she collected in northeastern North Carolina back to the Norfolk, Virginia offices of People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, but she said the smell in the van had overwhelmed her in the past. The smell was so bad it was hard to drive home, she testified. She and her co-worker, Andrew Cook, decided instead to drop the animal carcasses into a bin behind a grocery store about 50 miles southwest of Norfolk. Hinkle said Thursday she regretted the decision and it was disrespectful to the community. Virginia moved forward this week to apologize for slavery, something no president or legislature has done. The Virginia House Rules Committee unanimously approved a measure that expresses, quote, profound regret, unquote, for the state's role in the slave trade and other injustices against African Americans and Native Americans. The original proposal called for atonement. This is a good first step, says the representative who introduced that original version, whose great-great-grandfather was a slave. He says the wording was changed because some lawmakers said an apology could lead to reparations or cash payments to slave descendants. A proposal in the state Senate expressing profound contrition won unanimous approval on Monday. Turner Broadcasting, as you know, said in a statement that it had planned to, that it planted those weird little devices in many major cities. Boston was the only one that where it sparked a terror alert. Turner Broadcasting Chairman and CEO Phil Kent issued an apology to the citizens of Boston in which he said his company had directed the third-party marketing firm that posted the advertisements to take them down immediately at all 10 cities. Kent added, "We appreciate the gravity of the situation, and like any responsible company would, are putting all necessary resources towards understanding the facts surrounding it as quickly as possible." That's what they don't have, an understanding of the facts. Dateline Italy, former Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi has said sorry to his wife for flirting with other women after she demanded a public apology. Mr. Berlusconi issued a written statement referring to the constant pressure he was under from work, trips, politics, and problems. He controls Italy's three TV networks and was prime minister. Can we all feel sorry for him now? Veronica Berlusconi, his second wife, said his flirting damaged her dignity. She demanded the apology in a front-page letter to the Italian newspaper La Repubblica. In the statement issued via his political party, that's when you got real problems. You issue a statement through your own political party. Berlusconi said, quote, "Forgive me, I beg you, and take this public show of my private pride giving into your fury as an act of love, one of many. I guard your dignity like a treasure within my heart, even when careless comments slip off my tongue," said the 70-year-old Berlusconi. That's some writing. She said her husband had told some women at a TV awards dinner, "If I wasn't already married, I would marry you right away." Berlusconi was also quoted as telling another woman, "With you, I'd go anywhere." Commentators say the fact she chose for her complaint, a prominent left-wing publication, traditionally critical of Berlusconi, would have added to her husband's embarrassment. Dateline Bridgeport, Connecticut, a former chief financial officer of the Cendant Corporation, was spared jail time this week as he became the final defendant sentenced in an accounting scandal that began 9 years and three trials ago. Cosmo Corigliano pleaded guilty to fraud and was sentenced to 3 years probation, including 6 months of home confinement with electronic monitoring. I hope that it doesn't interfere with the TV remote. And 300 hours of community service. Corigliano fought back tears during the sentencing and apologized in federal district court in Bridgeport, Connecticut, saying he took full responsibility for his actions. And finally, Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe apologized in parliament for comments by his health minister days ago calling women baby-making machines and rejected calls for him to step down. "I'm sorry, and I'm staying right here." The apologies of the week on a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, the response of Senator Joe Lieberman to the response of the federal government to what happened in New Orleans in the wake of Hurricane Katrina last May was angry. He issued a blistering statement added to the Homeland Security Committee's report on Katrina. At that time, of course, he was a Democrat and in the minority. He accused the Bush administration of withholding details about what top officials were doing as the hurricane arrived and flooded most of New Orleans. At the time, he said the lack of information left critical questions about disaster preparedness and response unanswered. Quote, "There are matters we could not fully explore because of agency and administration recalcitrance and in some cases intransigence," Lieberman wrote last year. Only through a thorough and comprehensive investigation of what went wrong could we be assured that the government we will know what steps are necessary to get it right the next time. And he was critical at the time of a decision by the then chairwoman of the committee, Susan Collins of Maine, not to issue subpoenas for that information. Well, now Joe Lieberman is chairman of the Homeland Security Committee, an independent who votes, well, who caucuses with the Democrats, and holding a hearing in New Orleans this week to basically show New Orleanians' message, we care, the senator now says he doesn't want to issue subpoenas for the information that the administration still has not provided. Quote, the senator believes a more productive use of his time and that of his staff is to make sure legislative fixes are implemented to ensure that a response to a future catastrophe is better, says his staff. The senator feels the American public has already concluded the White House response was lacking. Rather than take on the White House and open an old fight, he believes he can be more productive by moving forward. Yes, we were told at the time, we don't want to, you know, it's too early for the blame game. Let's get this response going. Plenty of time later to fix blame. Well, now it's later. I think this is an approach that Senator Lieberman can take much farther.
Reality TV has just gone way beyond cops.
Oh, what do we have here?
Looks like a murder one. Two bodies.
Wouldn't that be a murder two?
Yeah, or two murder ones.
Okay. All right, good.
What happens when a senator hits the mean streets? The bad guys get a one-way ticket to anywhere else.
So these are fingernail scrapings under this pestle's hammer.
Yeah, we can trace those.
Yeah, we could, but I don't think either of us wants a witch hunt.
Every fact's a clue. Every clue's a door.
Senator, we've got a positive DNA match on the hair samples. Mm. It's slam dunk time.
Yeah, but you know what? I think it's also time to look forward. Let's just make sure nobody with this DNA ever does this again.
No bones. Joe Lieberman and a team of real, dedicated crime scene investigators tear up the town. But they never play the blame game. It's hard to point fingers when they call you No Bones. Fighting crime just got a whole lot realer on the new Fox Tuesday, right after whatever the hell else we can find.
I'm sure they can find something. Now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. From the Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch, warlords in the Afghan parliament, think of it, have granted themselves an amnesty from human rights charges in a move that has shocked the country's Western backers. Legislation approved by Kabul will prevent charges from being brought against Afghans alleged to have taken part in horrific human rights abuses over the past 25 years. The charges include ethnic cleansing, torture, and rape, just like Saddam used to do. Human rights groups say that warlords either took part in or ordered the execution of thousands of people. Witnesses have told how prisoners were beheaded, boiled alive in vats of oil, or roasted in shipping containers. The new rule states that anyone who fought against the Soviet army in the 1980s cannot be prosecuted. If approved by the upper house, the legislation would trigger a review of international human rights treaties signed recently by Afghanistan. And anyone who described a member of parliament as a warlord would risk prosecution. Whoops. After the fall of the Taliban, Britain and America encouraged warlords to lay down their arms and become members of parliament to help kickstart the democratic process. Human rights groups say the MPs have failed to keep their side of the agreement by maintaining their militias. Where have I heard that word before? And continuing to profit from the opium trade. Hey, somebody's got to do it. And Dateline Baghdad from McClatchy newspapers, the U.S. military drive to train and equip Iraq's security forces has unwittingly strengthened anti-American Shiite Muslim cleric Muqtada al-Sadr's Mahdi army militia, which has been battling to take over much of the capital city as American forces try to secure it. Half of them are JAM, They'll wave at us during the day and shoot at us during the night, says First Lieutenant Dan Quinn, a platoon leader using the initials of the militia's Arabic name, Jish al-Mahdi. People in America think it's bad, but that we control the city. That's not the way it is. They control it, and they let us drive around. It's hostile territory. The problem, many soldiers say, is that the surge approach has been tried before and resulted only in strengthening al-Sadr and the militia. U.S. soldiers worry the latest plan could end up handing over areas to units that are close to al-Sadr's militant Shiite group. All the Shiites have to do is tell everyone to lay low, wait for the Americans to leave. Then when they leave, you have a target list. Within a day, they'll kill every Sunni teacher in the country. It'll be called the Day of Death or something like that, says Lieutenant Alain Etienne of Brooklyn, New York. They say, wait, and we will be victorious. That's what they preach, and it will be their victory. Al-Sadr's success in infiltrating Iraqi security forces says much about the continued inability of American commanders in Iraq to counter the classic insurgent tactic of using popular support to trump superior military firepower. After U.S. units pounded al-Sadr's men in August 2004, the cleric apparently decided that instead of facing American tanks, he'd use the American plans to build Iraqi security forces to rebuild his own militia. So while Iraq's other main Shiite militia, the Badr Brigade, concentrated on packing Iraqi intelligence bureaus with high-level officers who could coordinate sectarian assassinations, al-Sadr went after the rank and file. His recruits began flooding into the Iraqi army and police, receiving training, uniforms, and equipment either directly from the U.S. military or from the American-backed Iraq Defense Ministry. The infiltration by al-Sadr's men, coupled with the strength in Iraq's parliament after U.S.-backed elections, gave him the leeway to operate death squads throughout the capital, according to more than a week of interviews with American soldiers patrolling Baghdad. Some U.S.-trained units carried out sectarian killings themselves. Others, manning checkpoints, allowed militiamen to pass. Al-Sadr's gunmen got another boost last year and the year before when American commanders handed over many Baghdad neighborhoods to Iraqi units, transitions that were often accompanied by news releases that contained variations of the phrase, Iraqis in the lead. Quote, there's been a lot of push to transition to Iraqis so you can show progress, but have you secured the area? Asked Captain Aaron Kaufman, an Iowa native who works for a unit that acts as a liaison between U.S. and Iraqi forces. I think the political pressure has hurt. You're wishing away, you're assuming away enemy activity, and you hurt yourself doing that. In hindsight, many American officers said there was too much pressure to give Iraqi army units their own areas of operation, a process that left Iraqi soldiers outmanned, outgunned, and easy targets for infiltration and coercion. Iraqi soldiers were often pushed into the field by Iraqi commanders who didn't give them adequate food, clothing, or shelter, according to Etienne. Etienne was on patrol one day when he saw Iraqi soldiers eating fresh vegetables and meat. The afternoon before, the same soldiers had complained they had only scraps of food left. Who'd brought them their meal? It had come courtesy of Muqtada al-Sadr. Who's feeding the Iraqi army? Nobody, so JAM, the militia organization, came around and gave them food and water. So, you know, stick around for a while. We'll figure it out. News from outside the bubble. Ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Isn't it true how the hard things in life make us the people we are? It would be nice to have life easy, but would we have...
This is Le Show, and ladies and gentlemen, it may have occurred to you that the most overcovered pseudo-event in the history of the United States of America is the Super Bowl. You know, the game is overcovered, then the commercials are overcovered, then the coverage of the commercials is overcovered, then the internet replaying of the coverage of the commercials. So it's a thing. It's a big media thing. But it may not have occurred to you how much energy and preparation goes in to crafting that overcoverage. from the Found Objects Department, Hannah Storm, fixing to go on the CBS Early Show.
Let me see. These are my questions. These are the scripts. Here's the rundown. Okay, scripts. Here's all the scripts. And where's top story?
Right on the top.
No. You know what? I'll let you do that. Look through there. And then we're going to go over. You and I need to go over questions at some point. So this is called now called Dolphin Stadium.
No S on the end of Dolphin.
Dolphin Stadium. And it was like Joe Robbie. It was pro player, right? Okay.
What's in the name?
Huh?
What's in the name?
Dolphin Stadium. And how many does it seat? About 75?
Don't know.
Huh?
I don't know. But I can.
Okay, this has got to be changed. This is hideous copy. Look. You cannot say Rex Grossman, one up-and-comer, another wanting to hold on to his star status in the NFL.
It.
Huh?
That's not how I wrote it.
Of course not. Okay. Many ways Super Bowl 41 is a tale of two quarterbacks. Superstar, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Superstar Peyton Manning, right? Looking to what? Looking to prove he can win the big one? No.
Validate.
Looking to validate his record-breaking career.
There you go.
Breaking career, and Rex Grossman, and the Bears. Looking for respect, right? I don't know. And the Bears, much maligned, right?
That's fair.
Much maligned, Rex Grossman, who's just looking for a little respect. How about that, right?
R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Yeah. Okay. Bears fans see him as more of a liability. Okay. Hi, Harry. Talk a lot about Peyton Manning, the big star of the Super Bowl, not so much about Sunday's other quarterback, Rex Grossman. The truth is, even Bears fans see him as somewhat of a liability, right? That's not true.
That's a little rough.
Yeah, Rex Grossman, who's been wildly inconsistent, right? Wildly inconsistent.
Yeah, Hannah.
Okay, who's been wildly inconsistent. Who's been... Not, we've been talking a lot about the biggest star in the Super Bowl, right?
The standout star of Super Bowl 41?
Well, not standout star, just the biggest star, you know, of the Super Bowl, Peyton Manning. Not so much about Sunday's other quarterback. Rex Grossman, who's been wildly inconsistent, who's considered somewhat of a wild card in this game, right?
Whose inconsistent play has been this.
This is very simple,
fans.
Huh? Fodder for the fans. He's been dubbed the worst.
But that only works against the
Bears. Yeah. Okay, it's how about hi Harry, we're going to look at the quarterback matchup. It's been dubbed Demand versus DeWurst,
well,
right? What?
The only problem with that is that was all over the wire. Just
don't do it then. Don't do it. We talk a lot about Peyton Manning, the biggest star in Super Bowl 41. Not so much about Sunday's other quarterback, Rex Grossman, who's considered somewhat of a wild card in this game, right?
Even Bears fans are never quite sure what they're going to get.
Yeah. Well, you know what? This is just at the top of the story. Well, how do you want to say? It's a one quickie sentence. Talking a lot about superstar Peyton Manning, biggest star in the Super Bowl. How about? But there is another quarterback playing, right? The Bears, right? So something like that, okay? A quarterback playing the Bears.
Rex Grossman is seen as something of a wild card.
Wildly inconsistent, Rex Grossman.
Is that,
right? No, am I saying that here? I say much maligned.
You can do that. Peaks and valleys.
Wildly inconsistent, Rex Grossman. We're going to talk about quarterbacks, right? Something like that. Okay.
And
so
this,
then,
this is
just at the top.
But this is just chat with Harry.
This is still chat at the top. Okay. Our Rex Grossman, who's considered a wild card, somewhat of a wild card in this game, even by Bears fans, right? Okay. So that's the first couple of things that we do. Let me look at the Manning copy. Oh, God, this Joe Montana is hideous, too. Joe Montana is no stranger to Super Bowls. Holy s***. Okay, let me see the Manning copy, okay? Joe Montana is no stranger to Super Bowls.
Here we go.
Okay. Okay, welcome back to the CBS Early Show, scene of Super Bowl 41. Colts quarterback Peyton Manning has now won everything but a Super Bowl ring. Okay? If the Colts beat the Bears, and if the Colts beat the Bears on Sunday, it's sure to pay off for him and the entire Manning family. That sucks. Seeing Super Bowl 41. Colts quarterback Peyton Manning has won everything but a Super Bowl ring. Colts quarterback Peyton Manning is easily the most recognizable player in the NFL, right?
Colts record-breaking quarterback Peyton Manning is already a marketing...
Record-breaking quarterback Peyton Manning. We know. Well, we're going to see that in the piece. But is easily the most recognizable player in the NFL. Right? Is easily the most recognizable player in the NFL. And if he wins, and if he manages to win the Super Bowl on Sunday, right? Right? It's sure to pay off not only for him, right? But the entire Manning family, okay? Okay, now, some marketers say the real future of Manning Inc. lies with Eli.
Brother Eli.
Some marketers say... there's also a lot of potential for little brother Eli, okay? Not the real future of Manning Inc. Also a lot of potential for little brother Eli, right? Because he plays in New York, the biggest sports market of them all. He's just got a... But give me a line about the Giants. But the Giants have a ways to go. Right? No? But come on, give me something simple. But first, his Giants have to get to the playoffs. Something like that?
He's still got some things to prove.
Give me something. But first, his Giants have to get to the playoffs. How about
that? In the playoffs this year.
Yeah. Okay, but first...
Giants have still got some issues or some things.
No. It's got to be simple for people at home who don't know anything. Some marketers, because he plays in New York, the biggest sports market of them all, right?
Why do you want to change that?
I won't. That's good. Okay, fine. Okay, cool. All right. So those are the changes. I think they're good.
I think they're great. But let's just remember, ladies and gentlemen, Hannah's one rule for media communication.
It's got to be simple for people at home who don't know anything.
Damn you people at home. Why don't you get out? And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm. That wasn't preempted by a tornado.
Soft, listen to the warmth. We can listen to the warmth.
Yeah, that was me sneezing in the background. What of it? An ancient ice shelf has cracked off northern Ellesmere Island, creating enormous 66 square kilometer. How big is that? ice island and leaving a trail of icy blocks in its wake. This is in the Canadian Arctic. It really is incredible, says Warwick Vincent of Laval University, one of the few people who have laid eyes on the scene. It's like a cruise missile has come down and hit the ice shelf. The breakup was so powerful, earthquake monitors 250 kilometers away. Is that a distance? Picked up the tremors as the 3,000 to 4,500-year-old shelf tore away from the fjord on Ellesmere. It broke up 16 months ago, but no one was present to see it. The scientists say they are only now releasing details after piecing together what occurred using seismic monitors and Canadian and U.S. satellites. They say the ice shelf collapse is the biggest in Canada in 30 years and is indicative of the transformation underway on Ellesmere, Canada's most northern landmass. Quote, we're seeing incredible changes, unquote, says Vincent, whose group is studying the island's disappearing ice shelves and their unique ecosystems. People, he says, talk of endangered animals. Well, these are endangered landscape features, and we're losing them. In 2002, the graduate student Derek Mueller discovered Ellesmere's Ward Hunt ice shelf had cracked in half. The researchers have also seen the sudden collapse of ice dams and the draining of 30-kilometer-long lakes into the sea. Some of us wish we knew how big those lakes were. And more news of the warm mountain glaciers are retreating three times faster than they were in the 1980s, according to the World Glacier Monitoring Service. I didn't know we had one of those. Good idea. On average, the glaciers lost about 66 centimeters in depth in 2006, according to the latest report from the UN-affiliated body released the end of the last month. Their loss rate is 1.6 times more than the annual average for the 1990s, three times the average for the 1980s. The rate of change is certainly alarming. It's not a surprise. Interesting. Alarming, but not a surprise, says Michael Zemp of the World Glacier Monitoring Service. He says it is within the accelerating trend of the past 25 years and simply serves to make it sharper. The truly worrying observation, he says, comes when the past 150 years are analyzed in the context of the past 10,000 years of glacial history. Mountain glaciers reached their maximum extent for 10,000 years in 1850. Since then, they've lost 50% of their area and retreated to their minimum extent for 10,000 years. The glaciers, ladies and gentlemen, talking to us. And Dateline Berlin, this is not news of the warm. This is news of an arrest warrant that's symbolic at best. The CIA's clandestine program of abducting suspected terrorists and taking them to secret sites for interrogation, known as Extraordinary Rendition, unraveled further this week as German prosecutors issued arrest warrants for 13 CIA operatives in the kidnapping of a German citizen in the Balkans in December 2003. This is the second in which European prosecutors have filed charges against CIA employees. European law enforcement authorities say it's highly unlikely that any CIA officers, most of whom work undercover using fake identities, would be apprehended or extradited from the United States. But the arrest warrants filed in Munich mark another case in which CIA activities in Europe since 9/11/2001 have strained diplomatic ties and underscored deep differences between the U.S. and its transatlantic allies. The CIA operatives are wanted on suspicion of kidnapping and inflicting bodily harm on Khaled El-Masri, a German citizen of Lebanese descent, said he was detained by border guards December 31st, 2003, while en route to a holiday in Macedonia, handed over to the CIA, which took him to a secret prison in Afghanistan, interrogated him about his alleged ties to Islamic radicals in Germany. After 5 months in detention, during which he said he was physically abused, Masri was flown back to the Balkans and dumped on a hillside in Albania after his captors apparently decided they had apprehended the wrong man. That's what you do when you make a mistake. You dump the guy in Albania. A spokesman for the U.S. Embassy in Berlin declined to comment on the arrest warrant. Prosecutors in Munich did not name the suspects publicly. Masri's attorney called the arrest warrants a great success. The German government said it learned of Masri's abduction from Dan Coats, former U.S. senator from Indiana. He took Dan Quayle's seat. Then he was U.S. ambassador to Germany. Coats told the German interior minister that Masri had been grabbed mistakenly, but was paid off to keep quiet, according to German officials. Coats then asked the German he told to keep the affair a secret. Masri has denied receiving any payment. U.S. officials have not publicly admitted any guilt or responsibility. Extraordinary rendition, ladies and gentlemen, coming soon to a theater near you.
By night, he swings.
This time, the lady wears the pants.
By day, he spies.
Is your name Mahmoud al-Masri?
Mohammed al-Mahdi.
That's close enough. By night.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Here's one by the great Jimmy Webb.
Or by day.
But I just run an off-track betting shop.
Sure. I'm betting. You'll have a nice trip.
He's got only one way. Extraordinary rendition. Sean Paul Farrell is Jack Limerick. Cheech Marin is the Arab.
Limerick, you cannot leave me here. They torture the people here.
They swear they don't. Somehow, I believe them.
Uma Thurman is the handler.
Jack, I get so hot when you sing. Can I come back tomorrow night?
Sure, Tiger. But just one thing.
What's that?
Don't let me buy your ticket.
What?
If I do, certain restrictions apply.
This January, singing and kidnapping have a new name. Extraordinary Rendition. Everything else is just ordinary. From Birthmark Pictures, only in theaters until it's not.
Dear Harry, how come you don't mention Sirius at the end of the show when you list broadcast sources? I've been listening to the show on Sirius since I got it over a year ago. Channel 105, Sunday, 7 p.m. Pacific. Okay, I didn't know. But that is the end of this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world, through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, around the world via the internet on your computer at two different locations, harryshear.com and kcrw.com, live and archived. Available on channel 133 at XM Satellite Radio, as well as on Sirius Satellite Radio at channel, the hell is it? 105. And available as a free download at www.audible.com/theshow, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like me being aware of all the places I'm available if you'd agree to join me then. Would you already? Thank you very much, It's just too much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. The show playlist available at harryshear.com. And there's also an email address available when you click on to the massively refurbishing harryshearer.com. It's dizzying, but not so you'd lose your equilibrium. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions that originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.